I somehow knew it would be my own destiny. Off into a real war I would go. The horrors that I saw there replay in my mind. Sometimes I feel just like my little tall soldier, the one I threw away because he kept falling over, broken into, replaced by a new one with a new gun. Sometimes I feel like a thrown away soldier. I made it back home. I feel so lost and all alone. Why is it no one seems to understand? My wife is packing to leave. I'm losing my family. She says she can't live with this changed man. The horror that I saw there still haunt me every day. They just won't fade away. Sometimes I feel just like my little tall soldier, the one I threw away because he kept falling over. Like a thrown away soldier, the wounds that I suffered are too deep inside my mind. They just won't heal. It'll take some time. Until they do, I'm left behind. Sometimes I feel just like my little tall soul. Like a thrown away soldier.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. It's Thursday night. This is our veteran show. Tonight, we're going to be discussing, our guest is Linda Dominique. She runs an organization for foster the our active military men and women who are overseas. They help get foster homes for their pets. So let me get out of the way and let Mr. Henry Lee speak and go for it, Henry.
Thank you, Wolf. We want to thank our host for allowing us to share here on our Veterans Radio. As y'all know, and I hope you have a pen and paper ready, I am the president and founder of the Veterans Memorial Foundation. You can go to our website at www.thevmf.org, or you can go on HBM's website and click on Veterans Corner, and we're also on there. That we focus mainly on trying to help and house our homeless veterans, not only in North Carolina, but across the states. But we've got a special guest that, for which really touches my heart, is our veterans that's being deployed. A lot of them are single, that have no families, and the only thing they have in life are their pets. And it's a lot of people don't stop and realize, well, they think, well, it's just an animal. No, it's not. That's a companion. Our soldiers are willing to give up their companion to guard this country, to fight for our freedom. And what happens to the thing that's closest to them, their pets? They get turned into shelters or they get euthanized. To shed a little light on this, we've got a lady who's been working for years hard, basically started with nothing, and who is now in every state, Linda Dominique. Everybody give her a big hand. Linda?
Yes, sir. Good evening, everybody. Okay, well, give everybody a little background. The name of the organization is Guardian Angels for Soldiers Pet, and we started in 2005 with a foster home program for our deploying soldiers with pets, primarily the single and married couples that were deploying. And there either was no family member close to them or was able, due to health reasons or where they live, to be able to take the pet and care for them while their child or brother, sister were over in Iraq. And so we started a foster home program, and it started in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and our first five pets fostered were from Fort Hood, Texas. And then we had two cats from Fort Knox, Kentucky, fostered in Arkansas. After that, we started getting the word out through the internet, letting people know about the organization, what we were trying to do, and to move forward. The response has been great. Like I said, we started in 2005. This year, 2012, we're going into our eighth year. We have a little over 3,500 registered potential foster homes, and those are people that have submitted their information via our website that they are interested in opening their hearts and homes to a military pet.
Excuse me, Lena, before we get too far in there, could you share your website with us?
Okay, it's www.guardianangels4soldierspet.org.
Okay, Linda. I mean, I think it's fabulous on what you do. I mean, it's great. It's something that I don't think I would have thought of, because the veterans that we deal with, majority of them, they have pets. You see veterans out here on the corners and sitting here, you know, help a homeless vet. 8 out of every 10 has a dog. That's their only companion. What made you want to start or even get in or even come up with the idea of opening up an agency like this?
Well, my whole life, 35 plus years, has been in
the adventure back in the dark ages of time.
Yeah, back in the dark ages, way back. It's I've been involved with supporting our troops and our veterans up until 2003, primarily through VFW Auxiliary, which I'm a life member of. And then in 2003, due to a major heart attack, I was kind of put on the you can't work, you can't do this, you can't do that. So I just resigned myself to playing on the internet. And one day in December of 2004, I was bored, so I decided, well, maybe there's something online organization or group that I can get involved in troop support. So found a wonderful organization, which I'm a life member of and still involved in, primarily in spreading the word of what they do, by the name of Soldiers Angels. And I'm sure probably quite a few of your listeners have heard of Soldiers Angels. And about a month after I started, there was a posting about a soldier deploying that was in Toledo, Ohio. The only family he had was his dog named Scooby-Doo. And so myself and another lady in Hot Springs started working on, she was going to foster the dog in Hot Springs. We were going to, together, and some of the members of Soldiers Angels, were going to figure out a way to bring the dog from Toledo, Ohio to Hot Springs, Arkansas, with the intent to return the pet to its owner when he came back from Iraq. In the meantime, someone else in Toledo heard about it, contacted the soldier and said, I'll be glad to care for your pet and you get him back when you come home. Well, then I started doing some research and finding out that this was happening literally across the country. And soldiers were just relinquishing their pets to shelters. They had no other choice. No one around that was willing or able, family, friends, other soldiers, their families couldn't take them because they were deploying at the same time. So we started Guardian Angels for Soldiers Pet and went forward with myself, another lady. I handled the business side, she handled the coordination side, and we had 5 foster homes in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Well, it immediately, requests started coming in, but they were coming in from California, New York, North Carolina, Florida. And so just said, okay, I think we got something national here. So we just started recruiting foster homes, individuals, families that were wanting or interested in another way of supporting our troops, and that was through fostering their pets.
You know, what's really got to be hard is, and it has to go through our soldier's mind, what am I giving up my pet for? What am I fighting for? Is it worth it? I mean, I'm going to sit here and give up something that I love. Do I love my pet more? Do I love my country more? I know I'm taking a chance to go over to die. They don't know whether they're coming back. What is our government? And we have a big issue with our government. I try to keep everything. I don't like to get into political issues, but some of these soldiers come back with no arms, no legs. And when they come home, where's what I love? My country let me down. My government let me down. Where's my pet?
Right.
I think you're doing an awesome job there. At least they do know when they come home is they've got something waiting there for them. Somebody that's there when they get home.
Right. They know, and then while they're over there, thankfully to the internet and the email, they're able to know how their pet is. Our foster homes are fantastic. They send pictures. We've got quite a few now that have set up a Facebook page under the pet's name. They post pictures, you know, and they kind of write in as if the dog is or the cat is writing it. Or, you know, hi, Dad, here's what I did today. Or here's what foster mom made me do, you know, kind of get my hair cut. You know, things like that. So they put a personal touch to it. And then now have been expanding out the last couple of years to help the families of our wounded warriors because their pets and the wife and the children can go to the medical facility, for example, Brooks Army Medical Center down here in Texas. They can stay at the Fisher House there at BAMC, is its acronym. But there's no place for the pet. So they know now that if this is the situation they're in, they can contact us. we find a foster home near where the soldier and his or her family is going to be while they're recuperating. Foster home is there, and arrangements are made so that soldier can see their pet. And that makes a big difference for them. We had one soldier that was down here, was badly burned. He was in and out of consciousness. And every time he was semi-awake, he kept saying, "I want to see my kids." Well, the nurse on duty couldn't figure out what kids he was talking about, because according to her information, there was a wife, but there was no children. When the wife got down to the medical facility, the nurse asked her, she said, "I'm confused. Your husband, when he wakes up, he keeps wanting to see the kids. And we're trying to figure out what kids." And the wife said, "His four-legged ones. We have two." And so she learned about us, contacted us. When she came back in a week to two weeks, she brought the two doxies with her. They went into a foster home near the hospital, and when he was told that when he got better he could see the kids, it was like he started improving. He got that, like, "I'm going to beat this." And when he was able to set up in a wheelchair and could go outside, we were able to bring the dogs for him to see. And there was no, can imagine, here's a soldier and here's his two dogs, and they're just licking both sides of his face. And I don't know of a better picture to describe. The scene was like better than 1,000 words. Today and last year, we're now expanding out to work through the VA system to help our homeless veterans, because a lot of them, as you said, Henry Lee, they have pets. And we have a situation in Connecticut right now that the VA has been trying to get this homeless veteran to come in through the transition program to help. It's a female veteran, to help her. And it's like, yes, I want the hand up. Yes, I want to get on my feet, but I'm not giving up my two dogs. So our coordinator in the state is going to be working with the VA caseworker. We're going to get her two little dogs into a foster home so she can get the help she needs to get back on her feet and whatever needs to be done. And then when she does, then she gets her two dogs back.
Well, I mean, it's good. I'm sorry, but I mean, one is good therapy. I mean, it's just like telling somebody, "Well, you're gonna have to give up your kids in order for us to help you." I mean, to me, that doesn't help anything at all.
No.
I mean,
I mean, giving up your kids, myself and my state-level volunteers, my coordination volunteers, my directors, our outreach volunteers in the different states, is we have an educational thing to do, because so many people are saying that are working with our wounded and our homeless, these animals are very important in their life, because that literally is what they feel, and I as a pet lover would feel the same way. That's all I have in my life. That is my companions. That is the one I can go to, and I can vent all I want to, and I get that totally look that, okay, and I get that unconditional love that humans really don't know or understand how to give unconditional love. But that animal does. And no matter how you feel or whatever, that animal is always by your side. And I have had soldiers tell me that when they have come back home from combat, that they knew when they saw their dog, that was the only thing that had changed, had not changed while they were gone, because animals know no time.
It's an unconditional love.
Right.
Linda, do y'all have a time limit on how long y'all house or adopt vets or pets?
It's primarily, since we go on a deployment relating to a combat or peacekeeping or humanitarian mission, it's usually up to a year, and it could be 6 months. Air Force can be 4 to 6 months. Navy can be 4 to 6 months. Marines can be 4 to 6 months. Army is usually a year. But now we are getting Navy that's being deployed to South Korea, and they're going to be gone for a year. So we do go up for a year. We used to try to help those families PCSing, like from the States to Germany. And because it was a pit bull, they could not take the pet. But that was up to 3 years. And that is very hard to do. And then usually after the 3 years, they either opted to stay another 2 to 3 years in Germany, or they got PCSed to Japan for another 2 to 3 years. When you get talking 6 years in foster, it's just not feasible. It's not fair to the animal, not fair to the foster home, and usually the military family, after that amount, 3 years, will end up asking the foster home if they will just keep the pet. So, of course, I mean, that's great. The foster home, of course, yeah, they're bonded, attached to the animal, so they say yes, but then we lose the foster home. So we've gone to that basically 1 year maximum for any of our fostering. And, of course, if somebody's just joining the military, the first couple of years, we tried to help those just joining, but we run into a similar situation that after that 8 to 9 months of training, basic AIT, they're single, they find out on the base they're assigned to, they're going to have to live on barracks, in barracks, on base. They can't have the dog with them. So there, again, they end up, they either talk the foster home into keeping the animal, or they just never showed up and picked up their animal.
Okay, what do you get about people that maybe come back in ETS that's got medical conditions, especially mentally? I mean, I can't see just saying, well, we've kept your animal for a year. We're either going to have to give it away or euthanize it. I mean, are we flipping a coin here, or what are we doing?
No, I mean, they come back and pick up their pet. Now, if 2 months later or 6 months later, they're diagnosed with PTSD and they're going into the VA hospital for inpatient care, then they can come back into the program for a foster home, and that we consider a unforeseen hardship. It, you know, it has an impact. So, no, we're not. The foster home keeps, you know, if it's a situation like I described, the PCSing 2-3 years out of country, somebody just joining the military, of course, they're not considered active duty till they get assigned to a base and are really considered military. So in those cases, our experiences have been negative. You know, they usually do not want the pet back. They've decided, because their military service. Now, we're talking a family. I'm not talking a single person, you know, from the perspective. The PCSing we're talking about is a whole family is going. But they have decided they don't want to take the pet with them. And so it's kind of like, well, that's too long of a foster term, and you're really not looking for somebody to foster, you're looking to rehome your pet to a new home. And that's where the animal rescue world comes into play. So we recommend that. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's a different issue. I mean, people can, you know, expect if they're going to have a permanent change of station. Our biggest concern, I've talked to a lot of veterans, you get your National Guard and your reserve that's
right.
called up. Hey, you're going to be deployed.
Right.
These animals, I mean, they may be over there for 6 months, 9 months, or a year. I can see the situation there. And was a question I want to ask before we get too far. Y'all have a no-kill policy, right?
Pardon?
Y'all have a no-kill policy. I mean, you don't just euthanize animals after a certain time.
No, we have nothing to do in that arena. The animals come into a foster home for up to a year, depending on what the situation is. And then the owner returns and gets his pet, his or her pet. We don't get into euthanasia. Now, the only time that might happen is if the pet's in foster and, diagnosed with cancer, and 3 months further down, the animal is only, getting worse. The treatments aren't working, whatever, and the veterinarian says, there is no, the pet's not going to get any better. And
that's understandable.
Right. That's the only time we could possibly be involved from a euthanasia perspective. But basically ours is that short-term fostering for up to a year. When they're deployed to, if it's combat, like used to be Iraq, still Afghanistan, those that have been, then we have peacekeeping, which is still, some are going to Bosnia. You've got South Korea that they're being sent over for a year. Somalia, Yemen, Kuwait. What can be considered a peacekeeping? Then we have the humanitarian mission, which the example right now I use is Haiti. But we have fostered pets for our National Guard that back a few years ago, when a lot of the National Guard were activated to protect our borders and were gone for 6 to 9 months. So when we're talking the active duty military, we also are including the National Guard and the reservists who have been mobilized to go to Iraq or go to Afghanistan. What we don't get into is somebody that is going weekend in National Guard and they're going their weekend training. Because that's more like a pet setting, because that's a weekend or the 2 years in the summertime. That again is more like pet setting. So, they have other alternatives, other options.
I know basically what y'all do is consider the circumstances. I mean, it's not like a kid, hey, you're 18, get out of my house.
No, sir, nothing like that. I mean, we have what we call deployment, which is the three that I described. Then we have the hardship, which primarily are veterans that it relates to a medical and or homeless situation. But the reason we go through the VA system is because in the past, when we attempted to help veterans, we got scammed by people that were not, had never been in the military. And so, and I don't really like using these words, but it was like we got stuck with an animal. And since we're not an animal organization, rescue or shelter, we have no means of keeping a pet. you know, it's on a full-time basis because we don't, the pet ownership stays with that military person. We don't take no power of attorney. All we do is we go in and identify a potential foster home from our national database, and we advise the pet owner that we have, you know, we have identified a potential foster home. They do a meet and greet between each other, the animals, resident animals, foster animal, the foster family, you know, children involved, husband, wife. They meet with the military pet owner. Now, the final decision that their pet is going to go into that home, that is the pet owner's, not ours. Because the military person has got to be comfortable. They need to feel comfortable with who they're leaving their animal with because they are precious to them.
Linda, do you run across veterans coming back, especially putting the ETS, and we run into a lot, like you. I mean, we run into a lot of cons that try to say they're veterans, but
right.
We know enough about the military to where you can't bullshit us too much. Excuse my French.
All you get to do is ask for a DD-214.
Well, you get homeless people, they don't run around with a DD-214.
Right, but I mean, the local VFW or Veteran Service Order can get it.
Yeah, for which it's a long process. But
right.
If you get somebody that's coming out that's ETS, and we've got people. Me, it took me 29 years to get into the VA system. We've helped veterans get in. It's been over 40 years. The only thing they have is the shirt on the back. But what I'm saying is, if you get somebody comes out that's PTS, permanent change of station, or ETS, out, they can't get into that system and say, "Hey, you've got my pet. I can't afford to take care of this pet right now." What would you do in a situation like that? Or, and I'm sure you've run across it sometime or another, somebody that's been killed in action and come back and you've got their pet. Does it go to a family member or do you put it up for adoption or what?
It's depending on what is in their will. Since, you know, anyone deploying to combat has to make a will. And they're according to our military contacts at the bases, ACS folks and FRG people, that in that will, and they're advised if you have an animal, you need to designate what is to happen to the animal. Now, some of them have put the foster home down as the one to, you know, keep the pet. We've had some that they have have designated a relative. So it's variable, but that is covered in the will that they are required to prepare. We have only in 7 years and 2 months, this only happened one time that the soldier did not make it back. But a sister stepped forward, and she was listed in the will as the one that would take care of the pet going forward. We have had some where the pet was not in our foster, something the family member, the deployed military service person, was KIA, and we have got calls or emails from a shelter saying that this family surrendered their pet because they just couldn't handle or take care of the pet with everything else going on. And we have offered through the shelter to let the family know if they would like, we would help them by putting the pet into one of our foster homes for, say, up to 3 months. Could be a little longer, but the average basic would be 3 months. And so they have the option, because I can imagine they get hit with this news, they're and the dog is wanting out, the dog is wanting food, people are coming in and out, and it's in their minds, it's just more than they can handle. And yet we've not had one that have accepted that offer. We didn't ask them why they didn't accept it. We were just advised that no, they didn't want the dog around. But the ability is there if that happens, because we do want to help the family, and we realize what all they got going on in their lives, and that's the first thing they're thinking of, you know, is I can't take care of the dog. I've got this to do. I've got that to do. Family coming in, funeral arrangements, et cetera, et cetera. And that has been like three times in the last 3 years that we have learned of a situation like that where the family was taking care of the dog, but when the news came in, they took the dog to the shelter. And the offer was made through the shelter that we would, you know, assist and foster the dog, like I said, for, you know, up to a three-month period, if necessary, 4 months. We just kind of play that one by ear, but so far that offer has not been taken up on for whatever their reasoning was.
Linda, as far as, I don't know how close you work with these animals, but do you have a problem with the animals adjusting to a different lifestyle?
Not usually, because our primary goal is to put that pet into a home that is as close to what they're used to. If they're used to running in the morning and in the evening with their owner, then usually we look toward a family that runs with their animals or, you know, takes long walks in the morning and the evening. If we have almost all these animals are crate trained, and the pet owner and our coordinator will reinforce that pet, if you leave the house to go to work or go to the store, then you crate the pet because that's what they're used to. And sometimes that's hard for a foster home, especially one that has never used a crate or really understand the importance of the crate at times. Because those crates, if they're crate trained, that usually is that dog's security blanket. And so that comes with them. When these pets come into our foster homes, they come with their crates, their blankets, their pillows, their toys. They're kept on the same kind of food that they're used to getting, the treats. There still is a transition because it is someplace new. And with the meet and greet, that's usually before the actual placement. So they meet and get along with the resident dogs and everything's fine. But they go back with their owner. But then when the owner brings them back to leave them to stay there while they're gone, at first the animal is, you know, okay, he's playing with the resident dogs, you know, everything's fine. And then all of a sudden it dawns on him, where'd Dad go? You know, and they might start sniffing, checking every place their owner was at, and they might have a day or two. So we have process, we have flyers and information for the foster home as a transition. There's always going to be a transition, but since we are getting them in a home that is similar in routine that they're used to, it's not as traumatic for the animal. We've had a couple of times that the foster dog was doing good and would have done good in the home, but one of the resident dogs decided 4 or 5 days later, I don't like this addition. And there gets to be a little fighting going on. We move the dog, you know, just simple as that. We don't want the foster dog to get hurt, and we don't want the resident dog to get hurt, because foster dog might eventually go, I'm tired of you picking on me, and lay into him. Typical, you know, dog behavior. But because we have a plan of action in place, we usually do not have a problem. The one area that sometimes we run into, and we're running into it more and more, is if it's an animal designated as a bully breed because of the bully breed banning in the cities and the towns, plus finding foster homes for these animals because all that the person's never been around that breed or had one of those breeds, so all they've heard is the negative, especially since the Vic dogs. So in their minds, it's, oh, I can't foster that pit. Well, why? You know, what is there? Were you bit by one? Or, oh, no, but, you know, I mean, they're dangerous and, you know, they bite children and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's all the negativism. And so sometimes we are running into problems in helping our military that have a designated bully breed animal.
When you say running into problems, do you actually get animals that you can't place?
If they are actually aggressive, then we would not be able to foster them because we wouldn't have the home to be able to foster them.
Hey Henry, can I interrupt you for a minute on what?
Go
you were
for
just
it,
saying?
Brother.
I used to own a pit bull. Okay, I've owned her since she was a puppy. All right. To me, she was the sweetest dog I ever had. What she did is, it's not how the dog is, you know, aggressive. It's how you raise the dog.
I've always
known, because I'm a dog lover. I've had dogs all my life. I've had German police dogs. I've had pit bulls. I've had dachshunds. And I've always noticed that, you know, all these dogs that they say are aggressive, it's how you raise the dog, how aggressive it really is.
That's true.
You need to get that through a lot of people's heads that, you know, just because they're a pit bull or a Doberman or a German Shepherd, that, you know, they may be aggressive, but that's not because of their owner. It's because of how they were treated as, you know, as an owner.
Right. And that's true. And I mean, we do that. You know, it's not the animal. We do have quite a few pit bulls fostered in the various states. But what we're running into, and there's a difference between a bully breed and an aggressive dog. But if we have a dog that comes into the system, and one of the questions on the pet submission, has your dog bitten anyone in the last 10 days? If they mark yes, of course, they have to tell us when. And if that dog has bit, you know, 2-3 people, it's been reported, you know, quarantined, whatever, yes, that is the fault of the pet owner. That dog is acting the way it is acting. It's not the dog itself. But the foster homes can't take them because, one, they may be afraid of that, you know, afraid of that happening, and they don't want to get into a liability issue. If they tried to bring an animal into their home that has bitten people before, they could lose their homeowner's insurance, homeowner's insurance if that animal is going to be in their home longer than what's considered a vacation period, 2 weeks. They can't pay the insurance. The other problem is, and we have no control over this, is the bully breed banning laws. towns, cities across the country have got them. And if they live in a city or county or town that has a bully breed banning law, that animal cannot be fostered in that county, city, or town. So that may mean we may have to foster that pet in another state. And that, of course, is, you know, a whole different ballgame. We make every humanly possible effort to be able to get that pet into one of our registered foster homes. But there are some things that are just totally beyond our control.
Linda's.
Yes.
We've been talking about dogs all this time. Do you foster other things besides dogs?
Oh, yes. Cats, rabbits. We've had a couple of ferrets. We had a horse fostered in California. Snakes. And one of our coordinators now has a request to foster fish, some of them are contained in one size of a fish tank, and the others are in a larger fish tank. Now, that one we're definitely having some problems with. How do we move the fish tanks? We've gone out even to pet stores that, you know, these fish stores and stuff, to see if they would consider fostering them. So far, no luck. Any domestic animal, we have, you know, we have a foster home. We have people that all they will foster is rabbits. We have some people that all they will foster is snakes. We have other potential fosters that will foster gerbils, ferrets, parrots, parakeets. We cover any domestic animal. Exotic animals, no. Lions, tigers, things like that, no. They need to go to someone that is experienced in that area. Let me put it that way. Our family homes are Mary and John Smith down the street. A lot of them are veterans, so they understand the plight of, in fact, some of them have back in Vietnam era. They had to give up their dogs, surrender them to a shelter, never knew what happened to them. They are aware. We have we do have quite a few active duty military families. They don't have a dog. They don't want to get one because they don't know, you know, 2 weeks from now they could have orders to go to Japan. So they have made the decision, the family has, not to get an animal until they get out of the military. But this way they can foster, and if they get those deployment orders, PCS orders, we just put the pet in another foster home, similar to theirs. And so that's, in fact, some of our coordinators that are on the bases, that's what they recommend. If you don't have a pet now, why don't you consider fostering? And then when things get settled and you know you're not going nowhere, well, you can always, you know, think about getting an animal. But and we're just trying to keep as many of the animals as we can from being surrendered within reason. The one requirement we do have for an animal is it must be spayed or neutered. Now, we have had soldiers that come in and they have got a high dollar, have bought a high dollar dog with the intent of breeding that animal. We suggest if that's the reason you purchased that animal, then you need to get a hold of the breeder that you bought the animal from or talk to a local breeder to see if they are willing or know of another breeder who would be willing to foster that dog. Reason for that is primarily liability issues, plus our fosters are not very acceptable to having a non-spayed or neutered animal. And their concern is if that's a male dog, he happens to get out of the yard, goes down the block, and there's a female ready, and she becomes impregnated by that dog, then we've got lawsuits, high level chance of a lawsuit. With neither the organization or foster homes just don't want to get into that. And I can't blame them. And the organization, we don't have the funding and the ability to carry $1 million insurance for a situation like that. Same thing with a female dog. We run into the same issue. The other thing, trying to place an unaltered animal, a male dog that has not been neutered, into a home that has other male dogs, they won't get along. They get into this territorial pack thing. And so about the only foster home we could put them in would be a home where there are no other animals. So that's but that is the one ruling, unless a veterinarian says the animal cannot be spayed or neutered due to a health issue, heart condition, heart murmur, age, 8, 9 years old, couldn't handle the anesthesia. With a doctor's letter on the doctor's veterinarian's letterhead, that is the one exception we will make to the spay neutered policy.
Are you? You said you were trying to work through the VA. Are you getting any response or any help or support from the VA or the government at all?
No. We are primarily getting the word out in the states to the local VAs, like here in Texas. I've been in contact with several of the VA centers, both the medical and the homeless centers, as they call them, and they have our flyer. If they get a veteran coming through their programs, they contact us. We primarily prefer with the VA, especially on the medical side, because of HIPAA laws and confidentiality and privacy. We don't want to overstep into those areas where we shouldn't be. So dealing through the VA, we eliminate that worry. We've even fostered pets that the veteran did not have the name or the location of the foster home, and the veteran was known to the foster home as John Doe or John Jay, and that usually is when we get into not so much the PTSD, but the substance abuse programs.
That could be all tied in.
Pardon?
That could be all tied in together when you get into medical issues. I mean, you know,
right.
Believe me, I know, but I know it's expensive on what y'all do. I mean, basically, how do y'all fund it, and how do y'all keep up this organization?
Strictly, our funding is strictly through direct public support, donations by individuals, companies, other 501c3 nonprofits, VFW Legion, and we work within the money we get. So if it's a year, we only got raised $5,000 and we had $3,000 left from the year before. That's how we operate. And of course, being all volunteer, we have no overhead. But there's a lot of things that the IRS designates as administrative cost, and we have to stay within 65 cents of every dollar we receive from the general public has to go for a program, either our foster home program or our military pet assistance fund. The rest of it we can split between general, administrative, governing, and fundraising. So we're it's fun.
Hey, that's a lot of hard work, but do you ever get in a situation of where we can't, you know, support, there's nothing we can do for you, sorry, we're going to have to turn you down?
Yes, we've had them. There's, like I said, the PCS situation. Now, if you're talking deployment to, you know, harm's way or peacekeeping or humanitarian, no, we've not, to this point, we've not had to turn anybody away that has submitted their information. But if you get into the areas outside, like family PCSing out of country, somebody just joining the military, and we've had requests from DOD employees wanting us to take care of their pets, we turn them down because they are not military. They're employees of the government. We have had volunteers from some of the major big dog organizations that they have accepted a job under that organization to go somewhere for a year. We have turned them down because they're not military. Independent contractors. We don't do independent contractors that are going over to Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever. Those are the ones, yes, we've turned down. If there are other organizations out there, we recommend that they Google military pet fostering or soldier pet fostering. And they'll find other groups. Now, I don't know if the other groups are 501c3 or if it's just a group of people that have decided they're going to support our troops by people that have signed up on their Facebook page to foster. And we're learning each day that locally there are shelters or rescue groups or a business that has established a military pet foster program, and those are usually ones that are located near military bases, and they don't go out on the internet and promote it, but they will have their information through whatever their contacts are on the military installation.
Do you get any help or support from the pet owner itself? I know the ones deployed, I mean, they can have a direct deposit going straight into your organization. I mean, is this all? Go ahead.
No, the only thing we ask of the pet owner is they continue to pay the regular pet care cost that they would be paying if they weren't deployed. Food, treats, veterinarian care, grooming if it's needed. So they're still paying for that pet care that way, but those are the same dollars that they would be spending if they weren't deployed. And sometimes, and then that is worked out between the pet owner and the foster home that they feel comfortable leaving their pet with. Sometimes that is done by leaving a check for X amount of dollars to cover so many months, and then the soldier, the pet owner, sets up something through their bank or MyPay or whatever, that certain amount of money is to go, say, every 3 months to the pet owner. And then sometimes the pet owner or the foster home will tell the soldier, just take care of any vet bills. We'll take care of the food and the treats and the grooming, you know, kind of thing. So that's kind of negotiable between those two parties. But we don't charge anything for our service. Now, we do hope, and if a soldier, a pet owner says to me or one of our coordinators, do you charge a fee for your service? We advise them no, but when you come home, if you'd like to make a donation, we would appreciate it. And I do hate to say it, except for a couple of military people, none of them have, but that's okay. We're doing it because we want to. We're not expecting anything. So I don't, you know, it's like I said, it's we're strictly direct. We get no grants. We get no government funding. We won't even apply for any potential government funding. I don't want the government in the organization's business. And that's all I'll say on that.
Amen to that.
Yeah, that's another whole ball game, and gets into the political arena, so I won't go any further other than to say we do not get any, and we are not going to ask for any grants through the government. We have applied to the different foundations that normally support animal shelters and rescue organizations. Each time we have been turned down, because the fact that we are not an animal shelter or an animal rescue, because we do not have rehoming programs, we do not get involved with spay and neuter clinics. So that knocks us out of that ballpark. And of course, some of the military type grants we have gone for, non-governmental type. We've applied, we've been told it's great what you're doing, but we've never been awarded one. Because animals, unfortunately, are considered deemed personal property. And so, you know, we have everything for the spouses, for the children, you know, all of those wonderful programs that are very needed. I don't want anybody to think that I don't think they're needed. They are needed. But since we're really the first organization that has combined troop support and animal support under one roof, we're considered a hybrid organization. And
me too.
Nobody knows how to deal with us.
Well, Linda, it's been nice. So we're on over our hour here. So if you will, one more time, give out your web address to where people can contact you.
Okay, it's www.guardianangels, it's plural, for F-O-R, soldiers, plural, pet, P-E-T, .org. And on there, if they're interested in fostering, they can click on the foster a pet link. It will take them to a page to explain everything to them and where they can submit their information. If they're interested in getting involved in other ways, we have a section on the menu that says ways to help, and then there are several links below that, volunteering, donating, foster home, and other.
Well, it's time to say good night and remember your vets and your prayers. Wolf, are you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
It's all yours, brother.
All righty, folks. Henry, Linda, thank you for coming on this evening and giving us this great information.
Okay. Thank you, Wolf, for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Anytime it has to do with anything of the vets, you know, the vets are always welcome on this show.
Okay, sir, anytime. You have a great evening, and great evening to all your listeners. And if you're service members and veterans, God bless you, and thank you for your service.
All right, thank you. All right, folks, I'm going to leave you out with The Long Black Wall by Eddie Ray Franks. My brain can't think. So you have a great night. We will see you tomorrow night at 8 p.m. for Sonny Lee's Hillbilly Mix-Up. Good night, all.
Night, everybody.
I've been to Washington to see the wall. Oh, so many men died and gave their all. Just how many names I don't recall. Yes, I've been to Washington Wall. Long black wall. It's just a hole in the ground, that's all. And there's a lot of names on that long black wall. As tears come to my eyes, I held my head up high. And I walk the long black wall. Halfway down the wall, I stop to see this old soldier down on bended knee. With tears in his eyes, he touched the wall and cried. Then he turned and said these few words to me. I've walked through the mud, the blood, the sweat and tears. And I fought side by side with men whose names are here. As tears came to his eyes, he held his head up high. Then he walked the long black wall. A little farther down the wall, I stopped to see this old woman praying on bending knee. With tears in her eyes, she touched the wall and cried. Then she turned and said these few words to me. We raised that boy to believe that men had to fight to be free. As tears came to her eyes, she held her head up high. And when she walked the long black wall, have you been to Washington to see the wall? So many men died and gave their all. Just how many names can you recall? Have you been to Washington? Did your wall?